former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming at you on a Wednesday. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings. Alongside former NFL general manager Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. A great hour coming up ahead. We're going to kick things off here talking some Giants Hard Knocks, recapping episode two yesterday in a little bit. We'll revisit that with Connor Hughes of SNY, covers both the Giants and Jets closely. Also, a little bit of college football action in here today. It's Wednesday, so you know we're throwing a Why Not Wednesday in at the end of the hour, which is everybody's favorite. Plus, a segment that we haven't done before, which I think will be important to kind of set the tone for the 2024 NFL season. Last impressions. We're going to go through the NFC today, looking at the last time we saw some of these NFC playoff teams and how that impacts our picture looking at the teams this year. But let's start with Hard Knocks here off the top, Michael, because another very interesting addition is us peeling back the curtain, getting a look at all things the Giants front office. What were some of your biggest takeaways last night?
Well, I mean, I think it's great for the fans. I really do. I think it's wonderful for them to see kind of a behind the glimpse of getting ready for the combine, coming back from the combine, getting ready for free agency, and then it'll be ongoing towards the draft. So I think that's really, you know, something that I love and it was a part of for so many years that I think is fascinating for the fans to take a peek into that. I'm a little confused by the Giants. You know, one year they want to sign Saquon, one year they offer him a huge contract, and then they want to let him go and let him become a free agent. Like, I'm really not sure. I think one thing we did learn without a shadow of a doubt is they wanted a quarterback pretty clearly, which is interesting because they refused to negotiate with Daniel Jones to get him to take a reduction. I mean, they just let him have his $35 million. I don't understand it. Like, to me, if I were the general manager of the New York Football Giants and he was hurt coming off an ACL, I'd say, hey, look, Daniel, you get your money back, but you got to play the game. You got to be ready to play, to pay you all that money next season and not be sure you're healthy. Joe Shane's words, we got to protect ourselves. So if you want to protect yourself, take some of the money away from Jones.
You even tweeted as much in hour one. Why didn't the Giants ask Daniel Jones to take a $10 million pay cut earned back with roster game incentives and then franchise Barkley? Why is Jones' base salary untouchable? And I think that's why we saw so many of the reports, Michael, that were saying that the Giants probably have buyer's remorse with what they did to pay Daniel Jones. And we've heard through Hard Knocks Shane's comments on, hey, this is a guy who's had three major injuries in a short amount of time. We've got to protect ourselves. And so the conversations around quarterbacks and why they did their homework on so many of them during the draft and combine makes a lot of sense. Why he did have the conversation briefly with Elliott Wolf to plant that seed that, hey, if you guys are interested in potentially moving off of three in New England, we could be interested. Please give me a call. And based also on the interview we saw with Brian Daboll and Drake May, probably a little bit upset that they weren't able to make that work out, or that Tommy DeVito won them a couple games so they didn't get a better draft position because they could have been right up there.
They could have been. I mean, look, they could have easily been. And Tommy DeVito beat Green Bay. They beat the Patriots. I mean, Mac Jones throws two bad picks in the game. Bailey Zappe comes in to end the game with another bad pick, or else that could have easily been flipped, those two. I'm not sure there's a big difference between the two. We know this. In our first hour, we had Adam Burke on from our wonderful website, and he was mentioning teams to play against and Survivor and the Giants and the Patriots, two teams having conversations about the quarterback, are teams that they're going to rely on in Survivor.
One thing that Hard Knocks does do well, and I will give them credit, is they find people and make them likable. And I feel like Brian Daboll, who has been very fiery on the sideline, all the stuff that went down with Wink Martindale and the like behind the scenes, we don't really know, but it didn't sound good. To have him have this perception, I think, is very positive. But at the same token, as we know from watching the Jets Hard Knocks last year, they have some authority to make decisions in what's being shown to us as well. So how much of that is really the reality of everything we're seeing, I don't know. But I really liked the way Brian Daboll came across. And despite all my, dislike is the term I'm going to use about the Daniel Jones situation, because I do not think that he is the guy at quarterback, it did make me kind of want to root for the Giants. I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to root for Daboll.
I love it.
I know, I got problems.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I like Brian. I do. I like Brian. I just think, to me, look, there is certain reasons why teams lose in the NFL. And the Giants, just for the the sake of argument, and I know I get labeled a Giant hater, which is not true, because I've learned a lot from the Giants, having worked with Belichick for so many years, and about how they built things. And with the 49ers, we were somewhat in partnership with them because of Tom Boyster and Tony Rosano's relationship. And so I feel like there is a sense of a pride that this company, this organization, but they've lost their way. You know, it's the last 8 years since Tom Coughlin has left. They've gone through four coaches, Daboll being the fourth. They have a 36% win percentage over that time. And you could just watch this Hard Knocks and understand that they've lost their way. It's what's referred to in business as called active inertia, which doesn't make sense because no inertia means you're not doing anything. But they're doing things, but they're not doing the right things. The right thing would have been this offseason would have been, we're coming to get some of Daniel Jones's money. We're going to come. Now, I know it's guaranteed, but we're going to come get it. You know, we're going to find a way to get it back. And we have to get it back. You know, we got to lower salary. We have to do some things to kind of get this where we can get our team in order. Because that, remember this, Stormy, managers do things right. Leaders do the right thing. The right thing would be to attack Daniel Jones. If you were the GM of the team, you would have gone after Daniel Jones.
No doubt about it. And that's why Saquon Barkley, understandably, sounded very disinterested on the phone when he was having that conversation with Joe Shane. Their owner, John Mara, stepping into the building. Every time that we have seen a glimpse of their ownership, it has been about, boy, I really don't know how I'm going to be able to stomach moving on from Saquon Barkley. He wanted that to work. And obviously it did not, because we know now that he is a Philadelphia Eagle. In addition to Hard Knocks going on this week, we'll also see Wide Receiver, the new series on Netflix, get a behind-the-scenes glimpse of a lot of those stars in the NFL, Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, the list goes on. That'll be fun. Also right now, ongoing in Las Vegas, it's talking season in college football. Media Days kicked off yesterday with the Big 12 out at Allegiant Stadium. Last segment in Hour 1, we talked to Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, a little bit about what's going on at Big 12 Media Days. I'm going to head over there actually after the show today. We also have Mountain West Media Days that are going on here at Circa. The set for their show is right out here in front of the sports book. It looks awesome. So kudos to the Mountain West for doing their deal here. Players today, coaches tomorrow. I saw a tweet just now from Brett McMurphy of Action Network who said, Deion Sanders, first coach in history of Media Days to go with sunglasses indoors. So Coach Prime on the podium right now. I'm sure we'll get some great sound bites to play for you guys tomorrow. But as we go to the Big 12, 16 teams in the Big 12 for first time in history. New additions this year coming over from the Pac-12, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and ASU. Utah and Oklahoma, Michael, two teams in the playoff era who have been ranked the most but never won the CFP, both with a golden opportunity, it looks like, this season as two of the top three favorites in the Big 12. Utah plus 320, Kansas State plus 380, and Oklahoma State sitting there at plus 750. I'm really excited to see this league. Brett Yormark called it potentially the deepest in America. And, well, I don't know about that, but maybe top to bottom, there's a lot of talent here.
Yeah, there really is. I mean, when you look at it, look, I think Arizona at 10-1 is a good play. They bring most everybody back, right? They have the young quarterback, Noah. They've got the great receiver in T-Mac there. I think that's a good team that was improving last year, that finished strong, that beat Oklahoma in a bowl game. And I don't think they're going to be an easy out. I mean, Utah to me is. Kansas State, their kind of demeanors are more Big Ten. But I think it is a deep. And I think there's a lot of urgency at Baylor. I mean, Dave Aranda's got to win at Baylor or he's going to be out of that. Arizona State's in a complete rebuild team, and we'll see what Satterfield could do at Cincinnati. This will be his second year, but at 80-1, they're going to have to get it going. And look, 2 years ago, TCU, Stormy, was competing for a national championship. Yep.
No question. And I really agree with you on Arizona, who's sitting there at 10-1, a team that I don't think is being talked about enough. Had a historic season last year under Jed Fish for the program. They go 10-3 overall, have an Alamo Bowl win over Oklahoma. And with Jed Fish moving on to Washington, you thought a ton of those players were going to go with him, but Noah Fifita, to your point, stays. Their star wide receiver stays. They, like Brent Brennan, the former head coach of San Jose State who takes over this program, is walking into one of the best situations situations in college football. But like, this is a conference for quarterbacks, running backs. You also have KJ Jefferson transfers from Arkansas to UCF. They're sitting there at 9-1. I'm like weirdly excited about the Big 12, and I'm not sure what's happening because this is a league I haven't particularly cared about in recent history.
Yeah, I am too. I like it. And I think, you know, Arizona, they kept all their their offensive lines intact. Yeah. That's one of the things that Fish was unable to do. He couldn't get any of those offensive linemen to transfer with him up there. Now, he got the quarterback, Desmond Williams, from Arizona, who we recruited to go with him, but he couldn't get Noah to go up there, couldn't get T-Mac to go up there. And those linemen, and that's been the strength of Arizona, they got two Pro Bowl, two really good NFL-type offensive linemen in that line.
And Dino Babers, former head coach at Syracuse, leading the way for them at offensive coordinator. Again, just to go through those odds for you real quickly, Utah is the favorite their first year in the Big 12, and I love all things Utah this year. A ton of returning production from the team that did win back-to-back Pac-12 championships before taking a step back last year. We didn't see Cam Rising at all last season. He's going to be there from day one. Tight end Brant Keithy is going to be there from day one. The defense is going to be good. Kansas State plus 380, Oklahoma State plus 750, UCF 9-1 as well as Kansas, and then Iowa State and Arizona at 10-1. The odds do fall off a bit after that, but a lot of really talented teams, it appears, on paper. And I'm excited. Like, Oklahoma State, I know I like what Stuart Mandel said last segment about the Mike Gundy comments. This is going to be a 24-hour thing with what he said about Ollie Gordon and the driving situation. We're going to move on from that, and Oklahoma has some of the most returning production in the entire country. It's going to go straight to football after that, and this is a team with some pretty high expectations. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. When we come back, getting into last impressions. How does the last time we saw these teams in the NFC impact our view of them moving forward? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than a month, and lucky for you, our VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new VSiN NFL betting guide. This thing has comprehensive team profiles with power ratings and win total predictions, proven betting systems like trends and how to win your bet with our betting splits, plus top picks for season win totals, futures, props, awards, markets, and so much more. But to get access to the guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we're offering a great deal. Instead of the usual $240 price, we're giving VSiN Pro out for $199. And as a special bonus, we're adding in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of access to everything we do here at VSiN, in addition to the guides, the daily betting splits, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, data, and more for just $199 plus that bonus month. Head to vsin.com/subscribe now and use our promo code Lombardi to cash in on your discount. That's vsin.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Talking a little NFL here, looking specifically at what we're calling last impressions. So we're going through all of these NFC playoff teams from a year ago and the last time we saw them. So for the players and coaches, that's the last taste in their mouth from their previous season. How did the way that game went potentially impact their offseason, personnel decisions, what we can expect from them in 2024, and a whole lot more. So let's start in the wild card round in the NFC this past season, as the Green Bay Packers defeated the Dallas Cowboys 48-32. So this was the last time we saw the Cowboys in action. 48 points scored on that defense, Michael, the most Dallas had ever allowed in a playoff game in franchise history. What was the lasting impression for you on Dallas coming out of this game?
Their inability to play run defense. And I think Malik Hooker said it well when he said that he doesn't want Micah Parsons to do a podcast. He wants them to get up there and run support. I think that's my lasting impression. The other thing that was, for me, I think, clear was Mike McCarthy trying to get into a track meet in this game as opposed to slowing it down. I think they got really concerned right away. And I think they played with desperation, not with confidence or really courage. So that was my of the Dallas. I mean, to me, the moment was not there. They couldn't handle it. And I think for Green Bay, their youth, their athleticism really dominated the day.
Yeah, for sure. Let's stick with the Dallas side of this because we're going to talk about the Packers' last impression in a moment. But first here with Dallas, for Dak Prescott and company, it felt like for me it was another instance where they have a big game and a big opportunity, but they played small. And you mentioned the defense. Obviously, Aaron Jones went off on them, had no problem running. 118 yards, 3 touchdowns for him. It seemed like in addition to that, it's just every corner they were outplayed, they were outcoached. For Dak Prescott now as a playoff quarterback, 2-5 in the playoffs now. He had 9 picks all season to that game, including a pick six. And now as we enter this offseason and there's so much conversation surrounding Dak Prescott and his contract and what's going to happen here, how much do you think that game potentially was lingering in Jerry Jones' head as he entered this coming year?
I think it's been lingering in his head all offseason because he's really almost not done anything to his team. I mean, Jordan Love in the first half threw 3 incomplete passes in the game, Stormy.
Yeah.
They couldn't stop the forward pass. Dak throws 2 picks, right? You know, they turn the ball over immediately. They get a 3-and-out. They don't really get going. And so I think the concern is, and you wonder, like you keep saying, Dak had his best year with Mike McCarthy, but he didn't play well. You know, they got a 3rd-and-8 in there. They can't convert. They're down 7-0. There's no problem with that, right? You go down 7-0, but they have a 3rd-and-8 they can't convert. And now they punt it back, and now they're down, and they get the ball back, right? And he gets the ball back. We're still set. They finally get a stop, one of the few stops in the game, and then they turn the damn thing over for an interception. And I think, to me, there was a little bit of a sense of panic, and I think Jerry saw that in the head coach, and I think he saw it in his team, and I think he's going to take a step back and review what's actually happening. I mean, I'm not sure he sold that he's got to pay Dak Prescott $60 million. Like, if you're paying $60 million, much like Steve Ballmer didn't think he needed to pay Paul George. I mean, we didn't win anything with Paul George. Why am I going to pay him all this money?
Yeah, and you've even made the comments of if they do move on from Dak, you know, they're trying to coach up Trey Lance waiting in the wings, which still just, again, vomit-inducing for me personally. But do what you need to do, Jerry. The Cowboys, after that loss, became the first team in NFL history to win 12 games in 3 straight seasons, yet fail to even make an appearance in an NFC title game. Of course, that dates back to 1995. Now let's go to the Packers side of this, who they survive after a dominant performance, as we referenced, against the Cowboys, and ultimately come up short against the San Francisco 49ers. So Jordan Love makes a statement in that game against Dallas. He's 16-21, 272 yards, 3 picks, 0 interceptions. Through that game, 9-game stretch of 21 touchdowns, just 1 interception before this game against the 49ers. But then here they are, despite leading after 3 quarters against San Francisco, from the time they took a 21-14 lead in the 3rd quarter, Michael, here's their offensive drives the rest of the way. Interception, punt, missed field goal, interception. They were 2-of-5 in the red zone for the game, and things fell apart for them when they had the game in their hands.
5 minutes and 26 seconds in the 4th quarter, 3 first downs, turned the ball over, couldn't convert 3rd down, 1-for-3 on 3rd down. They just got small in the 4th. They had a chance to win the game. You know, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. They get come back. You know, they got a 4th and they have a 3rd and 2. They can't convert. Incomplete over to Aaron Jones over in the flat. They've got a punt all of a sudden. The defense holds. And now they've got a chance with 9 minutes and 37 seconds to go in the game. They got a chance to kind of put the game away. And Carlson misses the field goal wide, 41-yard field goal, misses that. That's a turnover. We don't count that in the turnover category, but it is. And that propels the 49ers. They get right back in it. All of a sudden, it's 21-14. And when they had a chance to really do it, 3rd and 9 play was the killer, right? They had a chance to convert 3rd and 9 or to get it closer. They throw an incomplete pass over to Wicks. So for me, that was, to me, that's where I have a little bit of hesitation on Green Bay. Is Love all the way? Is he consistent enough to do it? Or is he not consistent enough to do it? I think that's going to be the concern.
Yeah, he reverted back in that game to the guy he was the front half of the season, whereas you've referenced, it appeared like Matt LaFleur was trying to hide him or protect him from himself a little bit. For San Francisco, meanwhile, the stat that haunted me was finally put away in that game. They improved to 1-30 straight up under Kyle Shanahan when trailing by 5 or more points entering the 4th quarter. They went on to mount another comeback against the Detroit Lions the following week. Did you credit San Francisco more for the win or Detroit more for the loss as they gave up a 17-point halftime lead and eventually lose 34-31 to the 49ers?
When you give up 27 points in the second half to any team, you're not going to win. right? I mean, it's pretty hard to win. You give up 27 points. And there is a thing called momentum, and I know people in the analytical community doesn't believe it, but there is. And that momentum, you know, by not converting the fourth down, by not kicking the field goal, and then giving the 49ers a chance to get going. I mean, 17 points in the third quarter by San Francisco, and then they got another 10 in the fourth. They had 27 points of the 34 come in the second half. That tells me that Kyle figured it out, and they got control of the game. And I think that Dan Campbell, I asked this the other day to Dave Beckett, and he said he's really not worried about it. I think to me some of those decisions came back to bite him a little bit. But my lasting impression of the 49ers in this game was they were able to come back from before, and Detroit's weakness, their defense, was their weakness.
And another part of at least my personal last impression from the Detroit side of things is that while, yes, they did lose a game that was in their grasp and they should have won, they were so dominant in the first half, was still just the entirety of the season being able to put together what they did to even get to that point. And then Dan Campbell hitting the podium afterwards saying, as hard as it was to get here, it's going to be even harder to get back. But for the San Francisco 49ers, their lasting impression ultimately came in the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs in overtime. I am still haunted by all of the talk of, did the 49ers players know the rules as they take the ball first in overtime? But they lose 25-22. What was your lasting impression from both teams?
Missed opportunities for San Francisco. They got a chance to score a touchdown in overtime. They missed the protection. They got a chance to put the game away in regulation, get another first down. Christian McCaffrey, you know, that George Kittle doesn't come over. They missed the protection. They had two opportunities in that game in the fourth quarter to put it away, and they couldn't do it. You know, they just couldn't do it. They had to settle for that field goal. They went seven plays, 40 yards on that drive. They had a really good chance to get the first down there. They had McCaffrey open on an option route to the right, but Purdy wasn't protected to the left, so he had to throw the ball to Ayuk over on the slant because Kittle was late getting over. That game was in their grasp, and again, the Niners are so good, they're able to move the football effectively. But what happened in that game was in the fourth quarter, they got tired. And once they got tired defensively, that's when we saw Kansas City go touchdown, field goal, touchdown.
The Chiefs are unfortunately becoming the 49ers Super Bowl kryptonite, it appears, as both of the last two have come at the hands of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, 25-22, that final. Now the question is, can the Kansas City Chiefs make history and three-peat? We know they have three rings in the last 5 years, but can they do the unthinkable and win three in a row? Well, the odds say they can, as they are the shortest shot on the board to win the Super Bowl, the San Francisco 49ers, the second, narrowly behind them. We're going to hit the break. We opened the hour talking all things New York Giants and Hard Knocks. Connor Hughes of SNY covers the Giants as well as the Jets. He's going to join us coming up after a quick timeout.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us on this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We opened the show today talking a lot about the New York football Giants and their offseason Hard Knocks. Episode 2 came out yesterday, and there was a lot to unpack. Somebody who has seen it now with these camera lenses, but also on a day-to-day basis covering the team. He covers the Giants and the Jets. Connor Hughes joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. SNY reporter at Connor_J_Hughes on X. Connor, I mean, let's start there with Hard Knocks. What have been some of your biggest takeaways from what has been very revealing about the Giants front office?
Yes, I've actually been surprised with some of the things that they've left in there, because that's the thing, is that these teams have full autonomy of what gets on Hard Knocks. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Jets episode during training camp last year was a little more boring, because they were very guarded with what they would and would not let Hard Knocks show. The Giants seem like they've had a little bit more of an open door. I mean, there were some comments that they made about Malik Nabers and his personality, which I was surprised that got on there. How aggressive they were considering pursuing Christian Wilkins and some of their criticisms of his play as a pass rusher, was surprised that was in there. And obviously, as you can see, we're really starting to get into the nitty-gritty here with Saquon Barkley, which in that one, I'm sure the Giants are going to try to paint in a blue light in terms of why he's not back here. But still, it's been refreshingly open, because I think for the last couple of years, the teams that have been a Hard Knocks have been more guarded with the information they let out.
You know, I agree, Connor. I mean, I don't think it puts him in the greatest light. Of course, it doesn't put Joe Shane in the greatest light because 2 years ago, he made the statement that he offered Barkley a lot of money and he turned it down. And then this year he's saying they can't afford him, even though the cap went up to $254 million. So, like, I'm a little confused about what happened from 1 year to the next. And then really what I wanted to ask is, if they were concerned about Daniel Jones' durability and health, he had an $11 million paragraph 5 guarantee on the fifth day of the league year that they could have easily gone to him and said, look, we're not guaranteeing that unless you give us some form of relief. We'll guarantee it if you go down to $30-25 million or whatever. But they made no attempt to try to go after Daniel Jones, and they treated him as if he were a guy who's won 5 Super Bowls.
Yeah, so specifically with the Saquon thing, so this is where it stands. Joe Shane is very analytically driven. He's basically the anti-Dave Gettleman in that sense. So the reason why he was willing to give Saquon Barkley a larger contract last year that would have paid him pretty much guaranteed 2 years but kept him with the Giants for 3 was because he was 26 years old. Every measure that Shane looks at shows him and tells him that after a running back turns 27, he begins to decline. 27, 28 years old, that's the magic number for a running back where no matter who you are, you begin to decline. Now, that doesn't mean you're not necessarily going to be productive, but when you look at the GPS data of you as an athlete, your speed is a little bit slower, your burst is a little bit slower. So when he was willing to give Saquon Barkley that contract last year, it was going to pay him for last season, this coming season, and then the Giants were going to have an option to keep him or move on from him, where theoretically he begins to seriously take a decline next season. When they weren't able to get that deal done and Saquon declined it and decided to play out on the franchise tag, this year now he is another year older. Now he is at the age where their numbers show them he is going to begin to decline this year. So the money that they were willing to pay him last year for the season he was still in his prime, and then this season, it wasn't necessarily on the table. So the one thing that Shane didn't want to do, and this was illustrated here in Hard Knocks, was that he didn't want to make him a contract offer that was going to turn him off to the Giants. Essentially say, look, we have no idea what the running back market's going to look like. We think it's a saturated market with guys like Mixon, Jacobs, Barkley all out there. We find it hard, and this was obviously a misguided and turned out to not be true, but they didn't believe that there was going to be a team out there that was going to pay Barkley north of $12 million a year, north of $11 million a year. So what the Giants didn't want to do was say, offer him $8 million as just a, hey, here's a contract, go find better, have a team go out there and give him $9 million and him be so pissed off at the Giants because they only offered him $8 that he just plays for someone for $1 million. So what Shane's stance was look, we don't know what's going to happen with the running back market. Go out there and find your value, see what it is, and then give us a chance to match. Because if you have an offer out there for $10 million, we'll go up to $11 million. Like something like that. The Giants would sweeten the pot to make sure they kept him a Giant for life. Ultimately, what happened, Mike, was that he found a team, Saquon Barkley did, that was pretty much the only team that was willing and able to go up to that $12.5 million. Because the one thing that any executive will tell you about the running back position is that it's a luxury. It is a position that you get when you have everything else. Saquon went to a team in the Philadelphia Eagles that has the top-tier defense that should be significantly better with a new coordinator. They have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, even without Kelsey. They have their quarterback locked up. They have two top 10 receivers in Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown. They still began this offseason with $40 million in salary cap space. That gave them the ability to go spend and acquire luxury positions because they had that luxury with the extra cap space that the Giants did not. The Giants couldn't give Saquon $12.5 million when they still need receivers. They still need offensive linemen. They still need secondary help. They are far, far away from where the Philadelphia Eagles are. So unfortunately, they just weren't able to give that contract that he was able to get from Philly.
That's really interesting insight as to how things all transpired ultimately with Saquon Barkley. And we heard Joe Shane repeatedly say in this Hard Knocks episode, he's 27 years old. He's 27 years old, and what that kind of means for the position afterwards. Also, I want to dive a little bit.
He was open with that also. He was open with that last year. Like, that's the thing is when you talk to Joe on the record, off the record, he was open about that magic number. 27 has been the number that's been circled for him on every notepad that he's had, every time he talked to Saquon Barkley's representatives, because he is there again. He's extremely analytically driven. And the last thing that he wants to do is put the Giants in a position like the Cowboys were with Zeke Elliott, where they were paying him for who he was, not who he is, which is why last year the money was there, because they were going to have him at 26 years old, have him for that 27 season, then have an out when he turned 28. They were not willing to go 3 years with him now, where they're paying him for the decline season 28, still stuck with him on 28, and then obviously they have him at 29.
I want to follow up really quickly.
Singletary's 27. Singletary's going to be 27 at the start of the season. What is he doing?
A little different financial.
Yeah, but still, if the back's declining at 27, aren't they all decline? Doesn't matter what the number is. It matters what if they play good.
Well, that's where I see it. $8 million a year. True, but the whole thing is that's why he was willing to pay Barkley $10 million a year. He was still willing to pay him because he believed he was still a productive back. He's just not willing to break the bank for a running back that's over 27 years old, which is why he pivoted to Singletary. And again, I think the Giants would maybe be in a little bit of a different position if they had a roster that looked like Philadelphia's does. The Saquon found the team out there that was one of the very, very few that had a roster solid enough where they could go afford to spend a ton of money on a running back. And the one thing I compare it to is something Adam Gase told me back when he was the coach. And I know Jet fans roll their eyes anytime Gase's name comes up. But there was that whole disagreement on did the Jets want Le'Veon Bell? Does Adam Gase hate Le'Veon Bell? Adam Gase never hated Le'Veon Bell when he was here. Now, the Twitter storm that Le'Veon's been on the last few weeks regarding Gase, he might hate him now. But back then, he didn't. His stance was, our roster is not good enough to be paying premier top-tier money to a running back. We're not. We get the running back when we have the line and the quarterback and the receivers, and it's the cherry on top position. The Eagles had the financial ability to go get the cherry on top position. The Giants did not.
Connor, these last couple minutes here, let's go back to the quarterback position, because obviously we saw the Giants do their homework at that position through the combine and leading up to the draft. What's your perception of the level of concern for the team around Daniel Jones in general? Because it seems like the team is really painting it as it pretty exclusively being a health concern, not a talent concern, in whether or not he is their franchise guy. How have you viewed this?
They made a wildly aggressive effort to trade up in the NFL draft to the number three selection, knowing that number one and two were not on the table whatsoever, with obviously the Caleb and Jaden going one and two. They made a ridiculously strong effort to go up to number three to get UNC quarterback Drake May. You started to see that in Hard Knocks last night. However, that's been something that's been known. I mean, that's well reported dating back to the draft, how aggressive the Giants were trying to go up there and get May. He was the guy they wanted. You don't trade up to get Drake May if your concern with Daniel Jones is just that he's been hurt. Mm-hmm. So they are publicly going to say it's injury issues. They are publicly going to say that's why they needed the backup. Internally, they know they are legitimate concerns. And the one thing that I will say about Daniel Jones is that there is a reason why this regime did not pick up that fifth-year option on him. They had concerns with him before he had the second neck injury, before he had the torn-up knee. They had concerns with him. When Daniel Jones had the season that he did, where he led the Giants into the playoffs, and I know we can look at, oh, the stats weren't necessarily mind-blowing. What he did by winning those games and then also winning a playoff game, forget, I'm not talking about the politics of like, oh, look, he showed he can do it. No. What he did was he played the Giants out of a position where they could draft somebody top 10 because now they're drafting in the 20s. He also took them out of a position where there was no one in free agency who was going to be better than him if the Giants let him walk. Derek Carr is not a better quarterback than Daniel Jones. Sam Darnold wasn't a better quarterback than Daniel Jones. There wasn't anyone out there they could get that would have been an improvement. And then the other thing, too, guys, to remember is that they didn't have the draft capital because of the roster issues to be able to trade up there and go get a top-tier pick. So, unfortunately, that happened to Jones.
Connor, we got to hit the break, but we will be calling you again at some point because we did not get to touch on the Jets at all, and I have many questions there as well. But thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks,
this was
Connor.
Great.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't checked out the new and improved mobile-friendly VSiN.com, now's the time. Updated best bets from our VSiN show hosts, guests, and analysts each and every day. Also, betting splits updated every 10 minutes on the website. Exclusive articles, including columns from our own Michael Lombardi. Betting tools, betting guides, and so much more. Head to vsin.com today. We're wrapping things up here on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. I was laughing as we said goodbye to Connor Hughes of SNY TV last segment because we had so much to dive into about the Giants. We didn't even get to the Jets, which are a whole other animal in itself. But as we were listening to Connor talk there, Michael, as it pertains to the Saquon Barkley conversation and the 27 number that he said has been circled on Joe Shane's paper about the running back position, how did that conversation impact you and your thought as a former GM when you were going through those decisions?
Well, the golden rule is there's no golden rule. That's the reality. Guys play longer. They have longer careers than in the past. I mean, 27 is okay for Devin Singletary, but it's not okay for Saquon Barkley. Now, well, they're going to pay Barkley way more. No, you're still going to pay the back. He's still 27. Now, to me, if Shane would have come on and said, look, we analyzed Barkley. His numbers from last year are slightly down. The Raiders will tell you that Josh Jacobs' acceleration from 2 years ago to last year had dropped significantly. They would tell you his burst had dropped. Now, this isn't just their eye telling you this. This is the numbers. This is the GPS on the uniform telling you this. If those all the numbers were coming back that he's trending in the wrong direction, I'm all for it. I completely disagree that the Eagles were the only team. The Houston Texans were heavily involved in this. They wanted him. They pivoted to Joe Mixon. Remember, Mixon was getting cut, and then they brought Mixon. They didn't cut him, and they traded him. Houston thought they had Barkley. It was down to the wire. So, I think there's a little bit of a misinformation. I think Connors did a great job. He explained Joe Shane's side of it, but I disagree that Derek Carr's not better than Daniel Jones. Carr will throw it down the field at times. Daniel Jones has never averaged over 7 yards per attempt. To me, the issue here is Daniel Jones. It isn't paying Barkley. It's paying Daniel Jones. You're paying the wrong player.
And how many times, Michael, have you said, who were the Giants negotiating against? Who else was going for Daniel Jones and being willing to pay him $40 million a year? I have a feeling that list was rather small.
And I didn't say, he said it, that, we can't pay Daniel Jones $40 million to hand the ball off. Well, Baltimore can pay $50 million for him to hand it off to Derrick Henry. Philadelphia can pay $55 million to hand it off to Barkley. Seriously, the reason you're in trouble is because you've overpaid your quarterback. This is exactly the problem. And you did it last year. And the team, and I said it last year, and I got crap for it all year. They basically had the disease of me. They paid the wrong guy.
Michael, it's funny. So many people have been very critical of your takes on the Giants specifically, right? And I saw a tweet even the other day of a clip of you being critical of the Giants. And so many of the comments were like, oh, he's a Giants hater. He's a Giants hater. And then you see this long group of them, too, that's like, but he tells no lies. Has he been wrong about anything with the Giants? Because it's true. You've said these things, but it's ultimately come to fruition based on what we've heard and seen behind the scenes and on the football field with this team. And the other part I thought was, go ahead.
No, I agree. If I was wrong, I would say I was wrong. I have no problem admitting it, but I've been completely right about the Giants for the last 10 years. Mm. This is the one team I would say I've been completely right on. They have no structure. They have no plan. They're just randomly picking players. Shane doesn't have any leadership skills whatsoever to him. He's, I could see now. I didn't realize he was so inundated into analytics, but I could see it now. He's being guided by that, and so I think to me, look, there's a reason they have a 36% winning percentage. I didn't make that up. I'm not responsible for their win percentage. They are.
Well, this conversation leads us to our first topic in Why Not Wednesday. But let's get that open rolling so we can rapid fire some fun questions for you.
Question. Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
All right, let's rapid fire get through a few of these Why Not Wednesday topics. One other thing that Connor Hughes said in our conversation had to do with the aggressive pursuit of trading up in the draft to get Drake May, that there are questions about Daniel Jones. Yes, on the surface, they might be sharing that it is all injury-related, but there is the talent-related question from the Giants front office as well. Could you say why not to Daniel Jones getting benched in season in 2024?
Absolutely. That's a, why not? I mean, I don't understand. Again, like, what has he done to demand he's going to get $35 million no matter what? I mean, every player knows they're in jeopardy of getting their pay cut. Well, he had a guarantee. He had $11 million of the salary guaranteed. Some of it was guaranteed for injury. Okay, so that was. But skill and injury only became for $11 million. That took the fifth day of the league year. They could have taken that $11 million and turned it into incentives. It's a joke.
Drew Locke and Tommy DeVito just waiting for their chance. Okay, another team that a lot of people have been critical about this offseason, this show included, are the Dallas Cowboys. But what if we're all just wrong? What if the mentality that Jerry Jones has in this, hey, prove me what you're worth to get the big contract thing, actually works? Could you say why not to a Dallas Cowboys alt-over season win total of 12.5 at 4-1?
No, you're not getting me there. No, 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 no. I think they have too many weaknesses. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to be an issue. I think the Dak thing's an issue. The offensive line, two rookies starting. I'm not sure where they're going to be on defense. Look, I know they're going to get four wins. They should get four wins against Washington and against the Giants. And then all they have to do is to get to 12. They've got to win, you know, of the next 12 games, you know, they've got to win, what, eight of them? So they got 8-4. They got 12 wins. But I just think, to me, they're just not good enough.
Okay, how about the Detroit Lions? They had a breakout season last year, won a division title for the first time in what feels like forever. Could you say why not to them having the most wins in the National Football League this season, 8-1, bet 100, win 800 if this thing cashes?
Why not? I definitely would say why not to that. I mean, look, they are a good team. They've improved their defense, which we know that, right? They've added defensive corners. They've added hopefully another rusher, Marcus Davenport. They're a good team offensively. They've got continuity. Why not?
How about the Los Angeles Rams? They are a team that a lot of people have been talking about as a potential playoff contender. If there's somebody to upset the 49ers in the division, could it be them if Matt Stafford stays healthy? Well, what about an NFC championship? 16-1 is the price. Is that enough?
Why not? Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't bet it now because I'm worried about Stafford's contract. I'm worried about what he's going to do. But yeah, why not, Stormy? Look, this is a good team, and they have a really good coach. And quarterbacking and coaching is, you never want to go away from that, right? Quarterback and coaching, those two things go hand in hand, and I think that that's what the Rams have. So I would say why not to that.
Oklahoma State is a team that we've talked a lot about with Big 12 Media Days going on over at Allegiant Stadium here in Las Vegas. Could you say why not to Oklahoma State making the CFP plus 800 the price? Could we get on board?
Why not? I mean, why not? I think to me, look, we have 12. We have 12 openings, right, Stormy?
Yep.
All I got to do is be one of 12. I could say why not to that. Sure.
I think so, too. This is a team that obviously catapulted itself to a Big 12 title game last year. Obviously, if you win the conference, you're in. But this is a league that we talked about the depth earlier. They could get a couple teams in there, even if Utah wins. If they're the second highest ranked team in the Big 12, why not? Very likely. They bring back a ton of talent, like we talked about with Stuart Mandel. Also, Colorado head coach Deion Sanders talked to the media today, just wrapped up a little bit ago. Do you believe in Colorado this year? Their alt over at 6.5 is plus 225. For them to go over 5.5 is juiced to minus 140. Is plus 225 enough for you to say they could get 7 wins? Could you say why not?
No, I think the competition's going to be a lot harder. I think it's going to be more difficult. I'm not why not in that one at all. I mean, look, one thing about Deion, one thing Deion has done, he's done a lot of good things there, but he's made people aware of their program. And they're going to have to do a really good job of coaching because no one's taking them lightly. And they've lost some players, too, in this. Now, they have a great quarterback, and Travis Hunter's tremendous and all that. But I think, to me, this is going to be a challenge for them. They are a team with a target. Even though they don't have a win percentage, they're a team with a target. Because when Deion comes to town, there's a lot of fanfare that comes with it. And people want to play well against them.
showed up to his press conference indoors with shades on because the future's so bright for the CU Buffs. We'll know a lot about this team right away, Michael, as he even said in the press conference today. Why couldn't our AD give us a layup for week one? Their non-conference FCS opponent is like the most dominant FCS opponent ever in North Dakota State. Then they're at Nebraska and at Colorado State, open league play against Baylor. We'll find out a lot about this CU Buffs team right away. The team that, of course, lost six straight to end last year's season. That's a wrap for us today. Michael, appreciate you as always. I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
Thank you, Stormy.